You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Jamie Carragher, and you are listening to the Cop Eye Podcast.
What is happening, everyone? Welcome back to the Cop Eye Podcast. It is another stat show. I had to check when the last stat show was, and apparently it was the 5th of December, which makes me feel a little bit sick that it was, just over 2 months ago. It feels mad. And we haven't done an actual podcast for a while, so again, apologies on that. But this is going to be the start of 2.0 podcast again. going to start smashing them out. But as always, I am joined by Optus Mike Reid. Mike, nice one for jumping on, as always.
Cheers, Mick. Nice. Thanks for having me on.
No worries. But we met for the first time this weekend.
Yeah,
we've obviously done these shows. Yeah, for the first time in person. We've obviously done these shows for a while. And then, the opportunity arose to go and see the Reds play Burnley at Anfield in front of the highest league attendance on record at Anfield, which nearly 60k. How was your day, lad? How did you enjoy it? Was it good?
Yeah, it was great, to be fair. Obviously getting trained there from Leeds, which is where I'm based, and then train back. Nice to see you and all the guys, and yeah, it was nice to meet up with everyone, really. And it's my first game of the season, so it'd be nice if I can get another one before the end of the season in with Klopp leaving. Obviously, it's sort of had that heightened, you've got to go now, aren't you, kind of thing. So I do appreciate you getting me the ticket.
No worries. It has turned into a bit of gold dust, like, to try and get tickets, obviously, with like the Klopp. It was already hard anyway, because like, when Liverpool are doing well, it's hard. But once that Klopp news came out, you knew every ticket was going to be like just ridiculously hard or expensive. And it's like, well, makes it a bit difficult. It was a good game. And yes, we, of course, remained top of the league with that 3-1 win. Of course, Man City have still got the game in hand, unfortunately, which they're going to win. Of course, we know that. And looking at their fixtures, let's not even talk about them, because we know what they're just going to keep winning games. It's depressing. The Reds won 3-1. And yeah, you threw a few stats out there. And the first one I want to bring up is, we talk about this probably every time, because you were more often than not throw out like a random stat. I think the last one was, I think it included Biscan, if I remember correctly.
Yeah,
this one was featured a few similar names to that, I guess, in terms of the headed goals in the game. All three were by headers. Tell us a start. I loved it.
Yeah, so all three Liverpool, weirdly all four goals in the game were headers, but speaking about Liverpool in particular, all three Liverpool's goals were headers, and they were all by different players. Jota got the first, Diaz the second, and ultimately the winner, and then Nunez the third, and they were all headers. So it's only the second time that Liverpool have actually had three players score a header in the same Premier League game. So since 92-93, sadly, nobody was recording whether goals were headed before the Premier League or left foot, right foot or anything like that. But in the Premier League, it's only the second time. And the other time was Boxing Day 2003, which I think me and you were talking before. It's not a game we remember, but against Bolton, another 3-1 win at Anfield. And all three goals were different players and no headers in that game as well. So it was Sami Khedira, who was known for his ability in the air, scored quite a lot of goals for Liverpool, and certainly set pieces. Florent Cinema-Pongol, who didn't score loads of goals for Liverpool, but he was a striker, so you can see I was in the list. And the other one was Vladimir Smicsa, who, again, I can't remember him scoring too many headers back in the day for Liverpool. Obviously, we all remember the Champions League final goal, but that certainly wasn't a header. So he didn't score many of them, but that's the only previous times. It's a quirky little few names in there, a quirky little start. Doesn't really mean anything, but that's the way it was. We out Burnley, you could say.
Yeah, I just love it. Hippie, and like you said, and Sinan Pongol maybe had a push, but Smita in there with a header. I mean, like you said, Istanbul. I remember a belt that he scored. I think it was the winner against Chelsea. But yeah, apart from that, and I think there was one against West Ham, I think I remember vaguely atop my head as a young child. But apart from that, if someone came up to you with a gun to your head and was like, name me five Vladimir Smita goals, I'd be like, oh, fucking hell, I'm fucked.
I seem to remember one against Leeds in the game Viduka scored four against Liverpool.
I'm sure
Smita scored in that game. I could be wrong. Yeah. Smicsa was the first Liverpool player I had on the back of my shirt as a kid, which is another niche little, just obscure players that you like as a kid when you're growing up. And he was obviously one that I used to love when I was little. So, yeah, I've got a soft spot for him.
Yeah, I think it was that era where, I guess, I don't know if it's the same now, because I don't really, if I buy the kit, I'm obviously not getting a name on the back. And I usually get the kits the year after when they're cheaper, because they're like 250 quid when they're brand new. But you're getting like new player. Like, I used to love that feeling, getting like a new player signed and you get them on the back of the shirt. And back in them days, I guess, in that era, like we've just been talking about 2003 and whatever, just after like the 2001 season, I guess it weren't as good for new players coming in. Like, I remember, I don't regret any of the ones I had, because I think I had like Abel Xavier, I think I had Smitser on one. The only one I regret is fucking El Hadj Diouf.
I knew you were going to say Diouf. As soon as you said regret, it just had to be Diouf, didn't it?
And you know what? It was that black boss kit as well from that year, which I absolutely love. And every time I see it when I go to my dad's, it's in the loft, I'm like, why did I do it? Why did I do it to myself? But
it was an exciting signing at the time. But yeah, it just went wrong, didn't it?
I think what people gets in people's heads a little bit as well is the whole Anelka thing, like not keeping Anelka and then going on to buy Diouf. But yeah, let's not get down that road, because start throwing out loads of expletives at El Hadj Diouf, and I've done enough of that in my life. and yet the other one you've sent over, which is another good start, is about Jota and Nunes scoring in the same Premier League game this season, which again is and there's another couple of names in there, like Liverpool related and second in the list as well, which again speaks to the duos and the combinations, and that's the type of stuff that we're seeing this season, especially players scoring goals, the good link up. Obviously, the Nunes and Salah link up, where Nunes was providing every assist for a Salah thing that ended recently, which was, as soon as that happened, I thought of you, and I just imagine your face going, oh, for fuck's sake, why'd you have to ruin him?
I did have a few players tweet me going, no, the run's ended, because we like 10 in a row, he'd got the Salah. But we've been missing that combination lately, the Darwin and Salah one, but Darwin and Jota sort of making up for that recently, because the stat is that the Burnley game was the fifth time they've scored in the same game in the Premier League this season, which is the most of any pair of players, which is quite surprising actually. So the games were the West Ham home game, Forest home game, both away and at home to Burnley, so they did it at Turf Moor, and the other one was Bournemouth away, where they both actually scored twice in that game, so that was really impressive. So kind of stepped up in Salah's absence. They're both in the top three for sort of goal contributions by Premier League players in 2024. So just as we started to miss Salah, think those two have started to contribute quite a lot, not just goals as well, assists, particularly with Nunez's assists are really high. So, yeah, I think that's been a really positive sign. And you'd almost say, once Salah's back now, I'd say Jota and Darwin have sort of made themselves the next two choice in the front three, if you get what I mean. I mean, Diaz has been great as well. Gakpo's had to be a substitute the last few games, really. But not because of anything he's done wrong, but just because of the form that those lads have been in. So I think that's a really positive sign. The second in the list, by the way, for the Jota and Darwin scoring in the same game is, there's Salah and Jota, they're on four. And also Sterling and Jackson for Chelsea are on four, which is not a name many will expect to have been in there, but somehow they have scored in the same game four times, which is, you know, an interesting one because Chelsea are in sort of mid-table, so you wouldn't have expected that necessarily.
Yeah, they're a good 20 points behind us, which I am enjoying, to be fair. Even though they won last night, I am enjoying it.
Yeah.
And I think the whole Salah thing's interesting, I think, because I think whenever he's been away in the past, we've not been, I don't know, we always seemed a little bit like square peg round all a little bit with anyone that goes in that position, just because Salah's, he's always available, he's never injured, he's always there. So you don't ever have to think about it, apart from like we mentioned before we started recording about like when we played West Ham and Javier Elliott played in that position and done it really well. Mm-hmm. We've seen now Jota go in that position and he's busting a gut, he's scoring the goals, he's making stuff happen, he's closing down, he's doing all the stuff you want. So it, in a weird way, because we had so many players missing, especially in the Burnley game, I think it was nine or ten, I think, or something like that, mm-hmm. in that game. To continue this run and in the way that we've been doing, especially missing Salah, who is the main man and always has been in terms of our goal scoring. I think it says a lot about how good we are, doesn't it, really?
Yeah, I think as a front five, the five options Liverpool have, I don't think it's, you know, controversial to say that. I think that's amongst the best in the world, and Liverpool are very lucky to have that. And yeah, like you're saying, season's gone by, Salah's gone missing. January and February are Klopp's two worst months for win rate as Liverpool manager, and part of the reason down to that is he loses Mane and Salah for the African Cup of Nations in some of those seasons. Now, weirdly, like the Arsenal defeat was the first time Liverpool had lost a Premier League game that Salah had missed since he joined, which he just doesn't. It's only because he doesn't miss that many games that had happened. But if you remember the 21-22 season where Egypt played Senegal in the final, so that was the last time sort of Salah missed that January period and even the start of February. It was, I think I remember Jota was right wing a few times, but I think Oxlade-Chamberlain played and scored in a couple of games from right wing. That season, he had a good season that season. Minamino, I think, had a couple of games on the wing. But yeah, it felt a bit makeshift, didn't it? This time it hasn't felt as makeshift. I think it's not been just Salah's absence that's affected certainly the Arsenal defeat and form in recent parts. It's just the amount of players out rather than just Salah. You know, Szoboszlai's been missing. Trent's only just back fit. Thiago, obviously, out. Endo's been missing as well. There's been a lot of players out. So it's sort of added to that, the difficulty of not having Salah. But as you say, that front, the other four attackers have really stepped up, and none of them look out of place, no matter where you put them in that front three. Nunez can play on the left. Diaz has played on the right a few times, to be fair, and looked fairly good. So, yeah, to be fair to them, they're showing a bit of versatility where they're happy to play anywhere along that front three.
Yeah, do you think the fact that Liverpool have, of course, we locked that right side was always, when we were obviously winning the league and stuff, it was Trent down the flying down the flank. We had Hendo over that side, and then we had Salah. Then them link up and triangles. Obviously, Hendo has now left and now came back to Europe at Ajax, which you haven't mentioned. And Trent went inside into like a double pivot. So it's the system, and I guess that those triangles that we were missing because of the system change and losing personnel, I guess we're not relying on that so much. Of course, we still want Trent to be playing those balls out to Salah into those areas and stuff, and we missed that, especially with Trent getting injured again at the weekend, because we said during the game he didn't look fit at all. That's really, cool. I think for their goal he was poor, and I just don't think he looked right, especially after coming back so quickly. So do you think that comes into it as well with the system change and stuff?
Yeah, well, Klopp actually mentioned in the Arsenal game he wasn't happy with the right side at all. And it was in that game, it was Gakpo, Gravenberch and Trent again, who again wasn't fit for that game either. I think if Bradley had been available, which obviously for obvious reasons he wasn't able to play, but he would have possibly played. But again, he mentioned that right side is not working. So we have had to adapt it a bit, and I think we have adapted it in the last sort of 12 months or so, really, you'd say, since sort of back end of last season as well, that with Trent coming inside. But even this season when Gomez has been at left back, which he's had to do with Robertson and Tsimikas being out, Gomez has inverted as well. But it's been more, when he does it, it's been more defensive minded. It's been, he's come in, he's almost done it in a defensive way, if you get what I mean. It's not necessarily the Trent way where he's going to spray passes forward and link up with the forwards. Gomez, you don't expect to do that. But he's done it in a way where he actually looked quite solid defensively, and he's almost marking attacking midfielders and things like that, and runners from midfield, Gomez can track him. So yeah, there's been they've basically tweaked it tactically so that there isn't that reliance on, as you say, that right side for Liverpool was so good for so many years, that Alexander-Arnold, Henderson and Salah right side was brilliant. You know, in fact, it's sort of underrated really how good that was, certainly in the title winning season. And the chase for quadruple in 21-22, that right side was fantastic. And yeah, now it is just a different setup, isn't it? Which they're just finding a different way to play, and that's absolutely fine.
Yeah, and of course, obviously, like coming in, and of course, he's had his injury problems, and we're still missing him as well, which is, again, massive miss. Of course, Alisson, we missed last game. Gomez, like you said, Bradley, who's been terrific. But before we get on to like Brentford and how you're feeling about it, you sent me over and the early kickoff stats, and I know we seem to do this every stat show, but it wouldn't be the stat show wouldn't be complete with us without us moaning about early kickoffs. And the one you sent me over about the early kickoff since Klopp joined, including this weekend against Brentford, tells a story, doesn't it, lad?
Yep. So early kickoffs on a Saturday, we're talking 12:30. It used to be 12:45 when Klopp first joined, so I've included 12:45 kickoffs as well on the Saturday. So this weekend against Brentford, that'll be number 44 for Liverpool since Klopp joined. So he joined, what, 2015, October 2015. So in, what, 9 years, we're talking 44. It's nearly five a year. And bear in mind, TNT, or BT as they used to be, are only allowed to pick a team six times in a year for that slot. So Liverpool are averaging five. So they're basically almost maxing out on how often they are picking Liverpool. So yeah, that's how you put it into context. Next highest is Man City and Tottenham on 39, and then below them in fourth is Man United on 34. So Man United on 34, Liverpool 44. It's 10 fewer, and I mean, I don't know the stats in terms of TV figures, but I would imagine Liverpool and Man United are the most watched teams in the country, I would imagine, with the fan bases they have globally, and well, we're talking in the UK here, but certainly the fan bases they have are huge, in the millions. So for Man United to have been picked 10 times fewer, I mean, you could argue, yeah, Liverpool have been chasing for titles more in that time than Man United have, so there's more of a draw there in terms of their games might have had more interest, but for it to be that significantly ahead, it's just been such a common thing. And over a quarter of that 44 times has been after an international break. Thankfully, this one, it's a full week off between games. Klopp's actually said in the past, he doesn't mind the 12:30 kickoffs if he has a week off before. So hopefully that's right this weekend, and hopefully he's not going to look silly for saying that and end up losing this weekend anyway after saying, but he has said that way.
Yeah.
It's fine if you don't have a midweek game because you can prepare for it. And it affects, for a top level athlete, their diet and their training is all tailored. And those 12:30 kickoffs, I don't know the sports science behind it, but there has to be a reason why. I think they're often dull games, to be honest. I've added a stat recently for Opta where there was a run of something like 8, 12:30 kickoffs where there was only two first half goals. So it wasn't even just Liverpool. It's just every team was just really sluggish to start. And I think there's got to be a reason behind that where they're just really sluggish. And I don't know when they're able to eat before a kickoff. But it's just one of them kickoffs that I just don't enjoy watching, whether it's Liverpool or anybody involved, to be honest. I don't know if you agree with that, Mick.
It's only a kick. A jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Yeah, well, like historically, they are bad. Like even when it's at Anfield, half 12 doesn't. I guess if it's just a normal half 12, it's bad. But after an international break, everyone's tired anyway because it's early, and then the players are also like, and like you mentioned, Klopp's mentioned like on his when he's been doing a presser on a Friday. He said a few times, like McAllister's got back at 4 a.m. and Darwin Nunes got back at 2 a.m. It's like, well, they're then going home, getting to sleep, then getting up late. Then it's all like you said, it's all like systemized around like the eating plans, and like it's all regimented. So anything that can knock it off balance will do that. I mean, in the good old days when they just rock up to the pub and have 12 pints and then go home, it doesn't matter to them. But like, nowadays, where it's like it is sports science and footy go hand in hand, and that's why we see pure athletes. It does, of course, have an effect. But yeah, 10 more than United is funny. It is funny. I think I was surprised that Spurs and City were only 5 offers. To be fair, just because we've had so many. But to be top, I think that says a lot, and I think Klopp's moaned about it enough, and we have on this show at least try and do our little whatever percent, 0.1% of trying to get it out there to moan about it. But yeah, that is a mad one. But yeah, just on Brentford, then we've mentioned before that like Alisson and Gomez and Bradley, they were all LFC posted like a little clip this morning on Twitter. So you could see Alisson there, you could see Gomez there, you could see Bradley there, which is like you said, it's losing his dad. I mean, losing your dad at any age is worse. Losing any parent at any age is bad, but losing them at 20 is, I think that can have a massive impact on a kid, and fair play to him for being, if he's going to come back this weekend, hopefully he does. I mean, if he doesn't, then it's obviously up to him. But I think the work that he's been doing recently, I think it's worth talking about just how good Conor Bradley is, because he's been, I think I said to you during the Burnley game, because we know Trent came back and he doesn't look himself. And I think I said to you, like, I think we're missing Bradley here. Just like down that right-hand side, he would have had a field day. Like, the energy he's got and getting into the box and making stuff happen, just from the short amount of time we've seen him this season, where he's hitting new levels, especially against Chelsea, where he was fucking unbelievable. Amazing. It was. It's been boss to see, and hopefully he can slot straight back in. And obviously, it's horrible to lose his dad so early, like I say, but if you can take... I mean, you can't take any positives out of that, but like, just trying to get himself back into the side, and yeah, just see how he gets on. I think it's been a massive breakthrough season for him already, I think, anyway. But the rest of the season, we're going to need him to be on his top form, because he's shown how good he is.
He's gone from that ultimate high. He's made his Premier League debut, scored his first Premier League goal against Chelsea of all teams to score it against, and then he's gone from that to the ultimate low of losing his dad. So it's you know, you sort of really do feel for him. I think even fans of other clubs will feel really, really sorry for him and what he's having to go through. But as you say, I think he'd have certainly played these last two games with Trent not being... He would have started, I think, both of them with Trent not being quite right. Trent sort of had to start them out of necessity just because he's there and with no other right-back. Curtis Jones playing right-back in the second half on Saturday. So... Yeah, and I was talking about Trent as being, for me, one of the top 5 players in the world before he got that injury, how well he was playing at the time. And I don't mind saying that. And for Bradley to come in and make him not miss that is absolutely unbelievable. And he did. So fair play to the guy, 20 years old. And as you mentioned, Alisson Gomez, Alisson, we know what a goalkeeper he is. Despite the mistake against Arsenal, it happens. Gomez has been absolutely brilliant and arguably having one of his best patches as a Liverpool player. And then it's been sort of knocked back by missing the game against Burnley, but hopefully his return can help as well. Konate will be returning from suspension. So there's options there at centre-back, because if one of the centre-backs had got injured in that Burnley game, we'd have been in a bit of trouble, because I don't have a clue who we'd have put there, to be honest. Maybe Robertson having to go at centre back or something, but yeah, it would have been a bit mad. But now that Gomez and Konate are there, Tsimikas and Robertson can now play at left back, Gomez can focus on being centre back. So players are back now. With regards to Brentford, we've not actually won away at Brentford in the Premier League. There was the 3-3 draw when they were promoted 21-22, which was a result that And you could argue it's one of those results that cost us the league in the end, because it's a game we should have won, really. We should have been better. Didn't win. Drew 3-3. We threw away a lead, I think. So it was one of them frustrating games. And last season, it was a 3-1 defeat. And frankly, it was one of those terrible games last season. And there were a few. So the Brentford one was up there. So ultimately, it's not a ground we've got a good record at. Brentford, we know, they beat Man City both home and away last season, and Man City went and won a treble. So Brentford have this way of dealing with the sort of bigger teams, in inverted commas. I hate using that phrase, to be honest, because I don't think it means anything. But yeah, they have this way of dealing with these teams who are expected to maybe have more of the ball against them, shall I say. And they've got great counter-attack. You know, Tony's back now. We know what a good goal scorer he is. So yeah, that will be a very tough game, especially with it being 12:30 on a Saturday. If Liverpool are sluggish, Brentford will make us pay for that daily as well, in a number of ways, whether it's on the counter-attack, whether it's in transitions and pressing us, set pieces, we know they're so good at. So, yeah, I think if the fact that Liverpool have got these players back, starting to come back, even Salah, we hope, might be back at the weekend, which would be a massive, massive boost as well. So yeah, even with those players back, it will still be tough. But yeah, it's just about win no matter how. I don't care about the performance. Just 3 points, please.
Yeah, I think it's been a bit of an issue sometimes with us starting slow. And then you factor in an early kickoff where it's going to be slow anyway. You factor in your stuff you've just said where it's going to be Brentford. Tony's back. He loves playing against, like you said, the bigger sides to prove a point. And I guess he's in the shop window, isn't he, as well? Because that whole interview where he was like, oh, the manager doesn't want me then, like a bit tongue-in-cheek, his contract ends. So he's going to want to come up and play against the team apparently he supported as a kid and prove a point and score some goals. So we need to be, like you said, we need to be on it. And if we've got the likes of, like you said, Gomez, Alisson, Bradley, if Salah is back, Boss, like you said, Konate back from suspension, as many as we can get back, in the side, it ups the percentage, I guess, in terms of getting a result there. But I think we've proven the mentality we've shown in some of the games. Of course, the Arsenal result, which we haven't spoke about, was just a bad day at the office, and they can happen, like where you just have your best centre back and one of the best in the goalies in the world, the best goalie in the world, have a fuck up and they score, and that's how they get the noses back in front. That's how they're going to do it. Then I guess it proves just how good Liverpool are and stuff. But I'm looking forward to it. I am. What are you thinking in terms of lineup? If Salah's fit, I don't know if he goes straight back in. I think Bradley, if he's ready to go, I think Bradley goes. Of course, has to go back in. Alisson goes back in, yeah, as good as Kelleher was in the last game. Gomez, do you reckon? Because I've loved Gomez. In that left back position, he's surprised me so much, because I think he obviously plays at right back mostly. Then when he moved over to left back, at the first couple of games, he just looked a bit like there was no balance at all. But just one game, it just stuck, and all of a sudden, since then, his levels have just increased. And I think there's a shout for him to come straight back in, I think, just because of how good he's been.
It's really tricky, and I think this is one of them. This is probably one of the hardest to predict lineups of the season, really, because we've finally got some players available and some options. I mean, if it was anyone in terms of Salah, if it was anyone other than Salah, I'd be saying, there's no way he throws him straight back in. But it's Salah, and makes me think maybe he will. But ultimately, we've got Luton in midweek afterwards, and then the Carabao Cup final the week after. So there's plenty of game time to give players game time. So I don't think he needs to rush anyone back who's not 100%. But yeah, because it's Salah and we know what a machine he is, he might well end up starting, even with Diaz, Nunes, Jota all scoring at the weekend. It could mean nothing for them in terms of, you know, Mo Salah's back. So Bradley, yeah, if Trent's out, I think it's the obvious choice to put him back in. You could have Gomez at right back and then Robertson, yeah, or Tsimikas left back. Konate is having a great season. So again, can you really? I know he got sent off against Arsenal, not one of his better days. But can you justify? I think ultimately Van Dijk's the only absolutely guaranteed starter really in the back four, but not because the others are weak, but just because of those options there.
Yeah.
I mean, Robertson probably does start left back. I'd be surprised if he didn't. He is Klopp's first choice. So then it's a case of, does Gomez play right back or Bradley? And then does Gomez play centre back or Konate? And Konza was great at the weekend as well, by the way. But I think even he would admit he's only 20 years old. He's probably fourth choice behind Van Dijk, Konate, Gomez. So that's fine. But yeah, it's those are sort of options. I think Endo possibly does start just in terms of having that, he's a natural holding midfielder. So I think he possibly does start again. He got a good 89 minutes in him at the weekend, so he's got that rhythm back in the team. I think getting Endo back into the team regularly will help him again. So Endo probably starts. Jones is like first name in the team sheet at the minute in midfield. He's been brilliant.
Yeah.
In fact, could well be the same midfield, couldn't it? That McAllister, Endo, Jones. I've been raving about Harvey Elliott recently, but he never seems to get a look in, but I accept he's only 20. So yeah, there are selection problems there for Klopp. Positive ones, not a case of, oh my God, I've got no players here. It's actually positive decisions that he's got to make. Whoever he picks deserves to be picked, to be honest.
Yeah, I think when we were outside the pub, just before we went into the ground, that we were talking about Harvey Elliott, and I think you said something like, what's Harvey Elliott got to do to get a start or something along those lines. I don't know if I'm misquoting you there, so apologies if I am.
No, I said it.
But, and it's a good point, and I think it's a good debate because he's kind of, I don't think pigeonholed is the right term, but like he's so good at coming off the bench, and I think he showed it again.
What's on Saturday, yeah.
That's what I mean. So coming into those, and I think changing the system a little bit, I think Endo and McAllister went as like a double pivot look like, yeah. And then Elliott got a little bit more freedom. I think he's just so valuable off the bench. I think it's something that, I think it's been that case for a while now, but I think it's just continuing in that way. I think it's maybe looking at next year where he can have like hopefully like a proper breakthrough season, obviously not like a new player, but like in terms of with a new manager and stuff, and obviously a new system and whatever else in terms of what his future is going to be. But there's no doubt on just how committed and how good he is. And I think like you mentioned, like the Gakpos and Gravenberks and whatever coming off the bench, when you've got Harvey Elliott who's going to come off the bench and run his ass off for you for 20 minutes closing the spaces and have the quality, get on the assists and get some assists, get stuff in, get some other stats on the board. I think it's always beneficial, isn't it?
Yeah, like I say, I do love him, and he only got one assist at the weekend. I know people think he set up the other one. I thought he did in the ground at the time. I didn't see the deflection that had come to go to Diaz, but it was slightly deflected, so they took the assist away from him. Oh. I always find that harsh, even as a stat guy. I'm like, oh, come on. But yeah, especially for a young lad, just give him it. But so he only got the one assist, but you remember against Palace, he comes on and scores the winner. So he's just had some he's had some big moments, and he's had some great performances, like you say. And I accept he's only 20, so I accept he's had a horrible injury, you got to remember, and alone at Blackburn, and he's still on 98 appearances for Liverpool, so he's closing in on 100 appearances for Liverpool. He'll be one of the youngest players ever to get to 100 appearances for Liverpool, despite breaking his leg quite badly and going on loan to Blackburn and making his debut for Fulham before he'd played for Liverpool. So we're talking about that sort of stats you'd expect for a guy in the mid-20s, but this guy is 20 years old. So he's got a long... I think he accepts that. He doesn't have to be in the team now. He's got time to develop. And I think the only thing that counts against him in terms of getting starts is how good the other midfielders are. Szoboszlai's so hard to drop. Jones is, like I say, I think he's a first-choice midfielder at the minute. And then he's not a defensive midfielder, so you're not going to play him over Endo or McAllister there. So it's just hard for him to get regular starts. Thankfully, we've been in the Europa League and we've gone to the League Cup final because he's got plenty of starts there. And I think that's helped him as a sub because it means he's got rhythm. He's got match rhythm. He's not coming in cold, like he's not started for a week and suddenly he's coming on the bench. He's actually played, he's probably started in midweek in the Cup and then coming off the bench. So he's actually got minutes in his legs, if you get what I mean. I think that's helped him massively. He's a player I really, really like. He's a Liverpool fan. He gives his all for the team every single game. And he's got the quality as well. So, he's just such a good option to have. And if he does start, I'm happy to see him start. I'm not going to be bemoaning, oh, we should be playing McAllister or Jones or whoever. I'm not ever going to say that because I really like him.
Yeah, I think he's, like you just said there, 98 appearances. That is that is crazy. I think it's always funny when like them stats pop up and it's like you're looking at like the age of the team, and when it always surprised me when you see next to Harvey Elliott 20, because he's been around for so long. Just think, oh, he must be like, is he 21 yet? When it just seems like he's been 20 for like 3 years.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's a valuable asset to have, especially when you're going, like you said, fighting on all fronts. You need Players League Cup and Europa League and whatever else we need coming up, FA Cup. So it's going to be very much needed. Hopefully we get loads more players back, and he can just stay as a bench player, because that means we've got like a full plethora of players. But I think with the interchanging of, like I said, the other competitions and stuff, I think he's always willing and he's always ready to jump into those games. Like I said, he's a Liverpool fan, so he's not going to be one of those who's moaning and not giving it all on the training ground. He's always going to be doing that anyway, because he understands the club and obviously being a Liverpool fan and stuff, like I said. So and then just to finish up, there was some heartwarming news about the fact that Sven-Goran Eriksson will be the Liverpool manager for the Legends game on the 23rd of March against Ajax, which I think is just so heartwarming. Of course, he's been diagnosed with cancer recently, and he was on Sky News talking about his favourite teams, and he said it was Liverpool, and maybe he wanted to be Liverpool manager in the past and stuff. And I think we all have our issues with social media about how negative it is and a bit of a cesspit and all that, but when someone's going through something so bad like that, and you can give them a day where they can live out their dreams in a sense, I think it's something so lovely. I think that's a big part behind it, is social media being used as a positive for once. But yeah, it's just such a lovely story that he's going to be able to do that. And I'm made up that I'm going to be there to see it on the day. Hopefully, as much of a packed out crowd as it can be with the new attendance, 60k, be boss to see. But it's just such a lovely story, isn't it?
Our thoughts and condolences go to his family and his friends and people close to him, because you know he had a great career as well, and he's loved throughout the game. And okay, never managed Liverpool properly, but the fact that, yeah, as you say, social media, it can be a sort of cesspit at times of. And it's got its issues. We all know that. But for Liverpool fans to come together and do this, Klopp actually said he doesn't want to manage a testimonial. He wants to come and sit in my office and do my job for a bit. And I'd, you know, if Klopp's willing to let him do that for a bit, then absolutely that'd be amazing as well. But yeah, it's just it's one of them feel good stories, isn't it? That he gets gets his chance in the dugout at Anfield. But you know, after saying he supports the club, so. That makes the day even better, and hopefully it helps raise more money for charity, which is what the game is about as well. Yeah. So yeah, it makes that day, that game, which is going to be some great players lined up to play in it as well, which should be good for the people going. I know you're going, aren't you, Mick?
Yeah.
But yeah, should be a great day, and made better by the fact that he's now in the dugout.
Yeah, boss. Well, we can end it there with that nice news about Sven. So yeah, nice Mike, nice one for jumping on as always. Really appreciate you jumping on.
Cheers,
probably Mike. Hopefully see you again soon at the match. We'll have a few more few more bevvies again. But yeah, nice one for jumping on, nice one everyone for listening, and yeah, we'll see you all very soon. Nice one.
I'm Jamie Carragher and you are listening to the Cop Eye podcast.
Network.